Up is Pete M. We say he's from Staten Island, from the Way Out Group and the Vision for You Group in Staten Island. But he actually does live here in New Jersey now. He might not be accepting it in his gut yet, as Father Ed said, but but he is indeed a New Jersey resident at this point, living over in Union. And he runs a fabulous group I attended on Thursday nights. And what is the name of that group? Oh, that's right. That's the Vision for You group. Okay. The Vision for You is the name of his group on Thursday nights. It's over in Union. It's a fabulous meeting. And I did indeed have the pleasure of sitting in on that group a few weeks ago and heard Pete tell his story through the 12 steps. And it was a great experience for me, very enlightening and fulfilling, and you know, and it's what it's all about. I mean, this program is all about recovery through the 12 steps and through getting a connection with a higher power. And that, you know, there's nothing more to say after that. So I'd like everybody to welcome Pete.
She did say I run that group, right? Just remember that when you come down there. There goes our 8-9 tradition right out the window. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful. How you doing? I'm from Jersey, but I don't sound like it yet. People ask me where I live, and I tell them the street. I haven't gotten into saying I'm on exit something something, which is what I find common out here. Where do you live? Exit 125. I'm supposed to know I'm from Brooklyn. But, yeah, I did move out here about 6 months ago and started attending some meetings and looking for a meeting with a solution, and it was difficult. And so myself and a few of us sat, and we started a group called the Vision for You Group. We meet at Townley Presbyterian Church on Salem Road Thursday nights at 7:15 to 8:30. And if you're looking for a group that's going to talk about a solution from our big book, we invite you there. It's a pretty neat deal. And we have some new people going through the book, and some people have been through the book a few times, and our meeting is one of the new bright spots in my life, so I'm grateful to be a part of that. I'm grateful to be a recovered alcoholic and part of this sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And before I get going, first things first, thank the committee for allowing me to be here this morning and share with you, and Ed for sharing before me. I have found in my experiences that this is an invitation that your spirit has extended to mine. And thus we commence shoulder to shoulder this common journey. And as we follow directions and we continue to wake up, we walk in the sunlight of the spirit. And that is a pretty neat deal, because my experience has proven to me over and over again, when I'm in that place of being in the sunlight of the spirit and awake to the present moment, I experience something. It's one word. It's called bliss. And that's a long way from where I left off when God separated me from alcohol in 1988. So I'm really glad to be a recovered member. And as a recovered member here, not cured but recovered, I automatically assume some responsibilities. And that is not only to wake up from the information in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe get moved to do some other work outside of AA along with, but also to be an informed member, to be in touch with our humble history, our legacy that preceded my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous, and to pass all of that on to the newcomer who walks in the door. And I've been very privileged to be a part of that, and working with others and helping others to recover. I give this information away the way it was given to me, and I share my experiences the way they've happened to me, and then God does the growing with new people. And I used to be at fault in trying to force someone's recovery to them and force my experience and my journey to them, and I found out that God will do all of that for them. And my job is to let God demonstrate through me what he can do and stand on the firing line, be in the trenches, and be there for the newcomer or someone who's looking to do this deal again. Maybe some of us have been around here a while and experiencing some white-knuckle sobriety, but God forbid if we tell anyone. Well, you know what? You don't have to tell anyone because we know it. You can see it. The same way when somebody walks in a door and you don't have to say a word and you know they're on fire. So there's many of us in here running around with untreated alcoholism, and some of those people take to this work and then light up. And they serve a great part of what we do here in giving this message away. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And, you know, that was a deal done by God. I didn't quit drinking. I tried and got drunk. I didn't stop drinking. I tried and got drunk. But God, in His infinite mercy, separated me, has kept me separated since June 23rd, 1988. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Anything short of God separating me implies self-reliance. And as you know, a real alcoholic, my self-reliance doesn't go too far, especially when it comes to, you know, stopping drinking. And God had to do that in His infinite mercy in a hallway, in the back of a hallway, June 23rd, 1988. I say that because I will not turn a miracle of God into a personal accomplishment and tell you, hey, I quit drinking, ain't I great? Like I said, I tried many, many times to do that and always failed. I mean, I would stay stopped for a couple of days, maybe a few times in rehab when I was, you know, taken away from my environment, and then only to hit the fresh air, or parallel with some sound reason came the insanely and trivially excuse for taking the next drink, and I would get drunk again, and I was right back to the same horror show. But my Heavenly Father said, June 23rd, 1988, enough. And now I need you to do some other work for me. And I've gone through some incredible, wonderful experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous in 16 years, that words would fall short to share them with you. As we know, when we talk about God, silence makes more sense. All these God experiences I've been given to me freely in Alcoholics Anonymous, words would fall short. And I've gone through some things in Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, the past year and change, that have been tumultuous at best. When the bottom falls out on you and you wonder, okay, what's up with this? How am I going to get through another dark, lonely night here? I mean, in 20 minutes, I was let go from my job, experienced a divorce, lose my house, and experienced some incredible, incredible, difficult financial times in about 20 minutes. And I said, well, I'm sober, you know, like 15 years. This is not supposed to happen because I'm in AA. I'm untouchable. Things happen. You know what? Even on those nights where I thought God wasn't paying attention to me, like I knock on His door and say, listen, I have this script and you're not following. And I would do things like I pray, you know, three times a day and I meditate three times a day. And God, by the way, in case you've been watching, I'm sponsoring six guys and I do a lot of things for AA. So how come I'm getting hurt a little bit? How come I'm getting pushed around? How come I'm experiencing some fear? Why am I going through what I'm going through? And I thought I was going to be rewarded by, you know, this incredibly easier life based on my external world because I suit up and show off Alcoholics Anonymous. And here was my lesson, and it was a hard one. The remedy for my alcoholism doesn't depend on what my external world looks like. It depends on what my internal world is like. With me? See, I would think if the ducks were in a row, I'm doing great spiritually, and therefore God is rewarding me. You did good, here's another, here's another, here's another. And what I found out also, that God will move me through experiencing those dramas of life, regardless of what's going on. Because I'm going to tell you something, through some very, very difficult times, I don't give that lip service in this last year, coupled with joyous times, my mind did not tell me once a drink would wash the night away. That was removed from the equation. And all I kept doing was turning back, work with a couple of words, turn, watch, aware, observe, turning back to this power over and over and over again. Even when I thought on those nights and those early mornings when I'm up doing my practice, He wasn't even listening to me. But I plowed a field and God will do the growing and will give me unconditionally. I was just judging God's behavior towards me, God's actions with me based on what was going on in my external world. Not true. I come out on the other side of this very, very difficult year. Great lessons learned. Incredibly great lessons learned. Lifelong lessons. And what I came out on the other side was, there's something we always hear about in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not conference approved either. But I would hear it for years. I would read it, and it meant a lot to me until this last year has become almost a mantra for me. A lot of us are familiar with something called footprints. I lived that this past year. That was it. Because coming out on the other side, I can see exactly what was going on. Exactly. Even in those moments of doubt, even in those moments of great pain, even those moments of where am I going? What's the whole deal about? I kept moving one foot in front of the other, and we trudged this road of happy destiny. And Lord have mercy, I'm on the other side. My life, I'm 45. My life has evolved to a place where it's never been better. Physically, one of the things I've been looking at over the past year or so, specifically the last 6 months, is, you know, we do this deal and we start to wake up and we're sponsoring people and we're part of this sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, what about, am I living this on another level? How's my physical health? How's my emotional sobriety doing? Am I really turning to this power and having an experience with this power, or am I giving it lip service at a meeting? So I can tell you, physically, I'm in the best shape of my life. Physical shape, physical condition. Emotionally, I've been brought to a new place out of some very, very difficult times. I learned lots of new lessons and sought this power with the desperation of a drowning man, and I've come out on another place with that. I fall short in thought, word, and deed all the time. I have my times where I experience fear. I experience doubt. I experience anger. Having an experience with that and living it is two different things. Living on page 52 and experience some of those things from time to time is a big difference. I'm no longer living there. And I don't doubt my Heavenly Father anymore. A great thing that happened to me going through the work the second time was, in a meditation came to me, very quiet voice, as if someone whispered in my ear. And it was my God talking to me, telling me, Peter, don't doubt. And that has walked me through some very difficult times. So it's been a really neat deal looking at this thing called recovery at a deeper level, at another level. I get to travel a lot and do lots of this all over. And I meet a lot of alcoholics outside of my neighborhood of Alcoholics Anonymous, out of my backyard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I seem to attract lots of people who have been in AA and just experiencing untreated alcoholism. And I meet a lot of people come to me who are relapses, who have been trying this deal for 100 years and just can't put any length of time together. They just can't stay sober for 6 months or 3 months or whatever. And we talk and we talk. And one of the things I've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time was meeting makers make it. And those who get drunk don't make meetings. And I'm not one who's going to get to a podium and tell you meeting makers make it, because meeting makers don't make it. It's been my experience and countless others that people make meetings, sometimes get drunk. Because we come here for the support in this fellowship, and then we run around Alcoholics Anonymous untreated with the mind of an alcoholic, and sooner or later it's going to catch up to me if I'm a real alcoholic and convince me that a drink on a day without a cloud on the horizon would be good. And then I'm powerless over that. But I also heard that people who don't make meetings get drunk. And those two things I sat with. I said, there's got to be something way beyond that. There's got to be a deeper level to that, a more credible meaning to that. What do you mean if you don't make meetings, you get drunk? And I would sit with, well, what happens if you're sick? What happens if a woman has a little baby at home and is a single parent and has to sit and take care of the baby and can't get out to, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days? I don't know where that came from, by the way. But 90 meetings. You know, what if you can't pull that off? Does that mean you're getting drunk? If it does, that means I have a pretty cruel and judgmental God. Well, I go on these travels and I meet some neat people. And I would ask them about this, and they all told me that they stopped making meetings. And then I threw some considerations out for them. And you know what was behind the not making meetings? Was this: their connection, their relationship with this power was gone. That was it. So we need to be here. I need to be at meetings. It's part of one side of our triangle. I need to be in this fellowship, looking for newcomers, being part of this solution. I need to be here. But that isn't the beginning and end of it all. So these people stopped making means, but their breakdown was their relationship with this power called God. And at that point, they were on their own. And there's one thing left to do sooner or later for people like us when there's nothing going on with us and God, and that's to drink. And we don't know what that day is going to look like when it shows up, nor do I have any control over the stopping the drink either. Because it tells me to go, and I go. And I can try to think it through as much as I want, but one day is going to come where I can't. And when we study our big book, and we look to page 24, it'll tell me that in black and white. Because I was one of those guys who would try to think the drink through, and many times I would get to, yeah, but it's Jack Daniels, how nice. And she's going to look really pretty in a few drinks. I wouldn't get to, once I start drinking Jack Daniels or Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy or Bacardi, whatever was available, that drink is going to take me to degradation, humiliation, being homeless, my family throwing me out, you know, walking around in the same clothes for 2 weeks and hating everything about me and everyone else around me. It wouldn't tell me that. Why would it? So I feel really just so blessed and privileged to be on the other side of the archway and to stand here today with dignity, self-respect, and a part of a place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of my meetings I go to, they're second column meetings. What do I mean by that? You have an hour of discussion about how they're doing this to me. My kids, my wife, my boss, my this, my that, and then we go home. And somebody who's sitting in a corner who's brand new came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to find out, hey, they're going to tell me how not to drink tonight. And they go home with saying, well, he complained about his wife, she complained about the husband, and the dog went on the rug. How do I stop drinking? That's what a lot of contemporary AA meetings are about. Instead of Alcoholics Anonymous being a pep rally for the power of God and what it does for us and what I could do for a newcomer who's just walking in the door, how we should be shouting from the rooftops to a newcomer, we have a solution for you. It's called God, and we're going to show you how to get there. And you never, ever have to drink again. See, I live a day at a time. That's my human condition. That's how I live, a day at a time. That's how God has placed me on this calendar, 24 hours at a clip. But my God doesn't wear a watch. So I'll sit with people and say, if you get integrated with this power, if you have a revolution with this power, a spiritual experience, this transformation, you never have to drink again. Now, that's going to ruffle feathers at a lot of contemporary AA meetings. Why would God deny me that? Why would God keep me a place of bondage of doing this white knuckle 24 to 24 to 24? I wake up and I go to sleep 24 increments. I work in that time. I do a lot of other things. But the spirit is bliss. The spirit doesn't wear a watch. My God doesn't have a calendar. It's there. And all I have to do is be integrated with it. And I follow a few simple rules. I have a spiritual awakening. I'm promising you, you never have to drink again. A book talks about it. Do you want to quit drinking for good and all? Dr. Bob said it. Chapter to Agnostics, they talk about quitting for good. They use words like absolutely. What happened to put the drink down 24 hours a day? We use that as this weight on our backs. What time is it? I got 12 more hours to go. That's not being of service to God or anyone else in here. God wants me, our book says, is to be happy, joyous, and free. And we can do that. I've experienced it. Even in very, very difficult times. And I feel really free to talk like this to you guys because I've been on the dark end of this journey. It hasn't all been a cakewalk for me. In the middle of the most difficult times this past year, I get moved with something that says, Pete, we need to go through the steps again. And I'm saying, God, not now. I got enough on the table. And anytime I get moved to go through the steps again, to make sure it's spirit and not ego, I'll sit with that in meditation. Is God guiding me here for sure, or is it just my ego trying to put another notch on my belt to say, hey, I went through to work again? And I sat with that, and I couldn't deny the Spirit. And in the middle of all of this that I was going through, the Spirit moves me to go through to work once again and revisit some things. And I wondered why. I could only see to the end of this room. That's my vision. My Heavenly Father sees way beyond that and says, you need to do this in order to move forward. Because if I'm still listening from screaming voices from yesterday, I can't hear the quiet, still voice today. I can't hear your voice when God demonstrates through you how to help me. I'm consumed with me and yesterday. What a good deal. What a good deal to be a part of this and have a solution and offer it to others. To tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, how I'm trying to be. One of the things I'm trying to be with and be like is to stay out of my thinking mind. As you guys know, the thinking mind is a wonderful thing to waste. There was a commercial on TV years ago. It said, you know, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. It's a great thing to lose for an alcoholic. Because what I've gotten to a place where is I can use my mind. Use my thinking mind to do simple things. But when it starts using me, I'm at its mercy. And you know what the mind does, right? Takes me to before and later on. It's attached to everything on the external world. It's full of judgments and prejudices. It's living in the past. If this would only have gone this way, I'd be better today. And when that happens down the road, I'll be better today. And it uses right now for a resting place to go back and cause more trouble. We hear newcomers, I've done it, you know, acting out. And then come to me and say, oh my God, I did this and I did that. I'm losing my mind. And what I've learned to tell them is, if you were losing your mind, you'd be doing great. It's you're too much in your mind where the problem is. And that's one of the things I've worked with in meditation, try to take into all my affairs. I fall short with it, yes. But it's one of the things, I do not pay attention to my thinking mind. When it starts to talk to me, it's like, thanks for sharing, have a nice day, and I'll keep moving. None of it's good. It's never good. You know, maybe in the past I would have gotten something like this. Got to speak at a spiritual breakfast. Okay, what should I talk about? I should be really spiritual because it's a spiritual breakfast. So what can I come up with? No, they won't like that. But if I talk about this, maybe they'll like that. You see what that does? By the time you get to the podium, you're wrecked. Rather than being here present with this breath, paying attention to this breath, mindful of this moment, and let God do what he has to do with me this morning. Let God do what he has to do with you this morning, as he did with Ed a half hour ago. Very simple. Alcoholics Anonymous, we hear keep it simple, and somehow that got transferred is don't do the steps. That's how you keep it simple. Do you ever speak to someone who's never done the steps, been in here? It's not simple. Very, very confusing. Very frightening. And bless them. Because to you, if any of you are in here tonight, I'm not judging. Just telling you there's a solution. There's a way out. But your illness, our illness, the mind, the ego, will not tell you it's a good idea. Why should it? Because it's going to die. And part of this deal is experiencing the death of self and all the manifestations of it. And it will fight for its life. It will not let you hear someone talking from the book and enjoy it. They're different. They're presenting something I don't want because I may get better and the ego might die. It wasn't like that when I got here in 1988. Some of these experiences. When I got here in 1980 after God separated me, I was looking for one thing, a night's sleep with no drinking. That's what I would have signed up for. One night's sleep, no drinking. Because you know when you're out there and you first come in here, how there's no such thing as sleep. The mind is running the show. You're tossing and turning, obsessing on a drink. The body's wrecked. What do I do? Give me one night's sleep and maybe I can face tomorrow without a drink in me. And I would have signed up for that and it would have been done. That would have been the contract I would have asked for. And God has given me an abundance. He's always creating, always giving. I go to an ocean with a thimble. I come home with a thimble full of water. My sponsors told me this a million times. While my Heavenly Father is constantly giving in abundance. 1980, I showed up here after getting through my seventh rehab. God willing, seventh and last rehab. And had no idea what was in store for me. I had tried meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would leave rehab and go to an AA meeting. I would go to my old home group, the Free Spirit Group in Brooklyn, drunk. I would leave a meeting and go home and get drunk. That's why I don't say meeting makers make it. I would white-knuckle the hour. I couldn't wait for it to be over so I can justify now my drinking. I went to an AA meeting and now I can go to the liquor store. Prior to that, there were six rehabs that brought me to a place of incomprehensible demoralization and a great thing, the bitter end. It started with a drink when I was 14 years old, and it ended about 15 years later. My first drink brought me to a place that I never experienced before, and it was indescribably wonderful. Drinking cold 45 beer over in Brooklyn on a corner with a bunch of my friends. I was driven by fear back then. never moved by God. I was totally full of me, driven by fear, where if you asked me my name, I'd have to say, okay, let me give this guy the right answer, because if I don't, he may not like me. I would hear my heart racing and the sweat getting off my forehead. And, you know when you're so self-conscious, you can actually hear your voice talking, you're paying attention to what you're saying, and you start to stutter. I was a stutterer for a while. I mean, this is where I was at. I lost my mom about 6 months prior to my first drunk, spring, summertime. She passed away January 23rd. Another thing that leveled me. So I show up to my first quarter cold 45 beer, not knowing what was going to happen, but other than what I saw people's experiences with cold 45 beer, and they were joyous, happy, and free. They didn't seem to be troubled by any sort of bedevilments. I had stern warnings from my dad, who I feared. Like, if he walked in here back then, I'd take a boat to China to get out of town. And he told me not to be drinking on the corner, not to bring any of the girls around the house that were on that corner. I thought the police would show up if they saw me drinking. They'd say, oh, Pete Marinelli's drinking, let's go. And the SWAT team would show up and jump out of the truck. And, you know, I'd go away to jail for a long time. But there I was, spring, summertime. I grabbed a quart, cold 45 beer. It went down, took another few pops. It went down, took a few more pops. It went down, and nothing up until a certain point happened. And then somewhere around, I don't know, the fourth or fifth one, I don't remember, but I do remember what happened to me, and that was, bang, I was electrified. I was untouchable by the end of the night. I experienced being joyous, happy, and free. No longer experienced fear. I got bigger and taller. The girls were talking to me. I was not afraid to talk to them. I was roughhousing with the guys. The fear of my dad, the pain of losing my mom, the fear of the police arresting me, fear was taken away. Every sort of fear was removed. I was awake to the present moment. I had a spiritual awakening when I drank cold 45 beer the first time. And I wondered, why'd I wait? Because I went home that night with no soiled clothes and no black eyes, no trouble, and I got up the next morning, remembered everything, walked into the park with a little bit wider shoulders because I was part of the older guys' crowd now. I had my own little war story from the night before, and I can sort of measure it up to them in a figurative sense. I was part of the crew, and I loved the effect produced by cold 45 beer. It worked. I was driven by fear. I had this judge in my mind that screamed at me what a loser I was. My mind was running the show. And then for a couple of hours on a Saturday night at the hands of cold 45 beer, none of that stuff was going on other than presence, having a great experience. I drank the following Saturday. I was drinking on Saturdays. It rolled into the weekends. And little by slowly, I was drinking through the week. And I started to experience some consequences. And they would be things like, you know, my family experiencing my alcoholism. They didn't do anything. I'd start to steal from them, come home late. I had a curfew. That went out the window as soon as it was given to me. I would come home with, you know, some soiled clothes. I would come home with a black eye. I was starting to get arrested. Blackouts became part of the regular routine. And so my family was wondering what happened to me. I had two kid brothers at home who were younger than me, who really... They idolized me. They looked up to me. They tried to be like me, play the same sports, music, all of it. They wanted to be like me, and they were always safe with me. When I started to get drunk regularly, they weren't, because they became fearful of me. Because I would come home very nasty and ugly and dumping a lot of this language on them. About this guy called Dad, this God out there who ain't so kind because he took Mom, and I really don't want to see my 30th birthday. And I hate my life, and it went on and on and on, about God giving me a deck of cards that I ain't too thrilled with. And they got all of it. They would tell my dad, and my dad would, you know, have these father and son, I'll be polite and say talks. My dad's a longshoreman from Brooklyn. It wasn't too polite. There wasn't too much talking. It was pretty much got cornered, and don't blink until he's done. He's cunning, baffling, and powerful also. But I make light of that. Back then, I'm not lying to you, when he would say, I want to talk to you, and my dad has a way of showing up. His presence has a way of getting there before he actually gets there. And so when he would point this finger and say, I want to talk to you, my knees would literally start to get shaky. And he would give me these riot acts. And they would, anywhere would do, a corner behind a truck on the, we worked on the pier, anywhere. And I didn't listen. I just waited for him to calm down and got out of there. And I got caught for stealing from this man. I was forging his checks on his checkbook to go cash them at the bodega or the liquor store to get fired up. And he got them back in a checking statement. I didn't know that stuff existed. And he caught me. And anyway, he found me by the Southbridge Towers in Lower Manhattan by the Brooklyn Bridge. And I went off to my first rehab. And 28 days later, I got out. I had a girlfriend meet me at the door. And I said, listen, they told me about these AA meetings, but bring up a jug. And I'll go to the meetings. And you know what happened? I picked up the drink. I didn't have a sufficient reason to stop. And even if I did, I would have drank anyway. My mind still told me to drink. I hadn't conceded to my innermost self I was an alcoholic. I didn't really know after 28 days and watching my mom die from alcoholism that I was an alcoholic. I didn't even know what it was. A mental obsession, a physical allergy that when I drink, the cravings intensified, never satisfied. My mind's going to tell me to drink regardless of the consequences of drinking. All I can think about is drinking. When I'm not drinking, when I am drinking, what am I thinking about? More drinking? And I had this other thing called a spiritual malady. Didn't know it back then, but that's what separated me then and now from the moderate drinker and the hard drinker. So 28 days later, I buy back the vicious cycle, and there I am. And now my family's starting to wonder what they're going to do with me. He seemed to be okay growing up, and now he isn't. And they would try lots of their remedies to fix this thing called alcoholism that owned me. And I hit my second, third, and fourth, and fifth rehab, and I spent 9 weeks in my fifth rehab and being physically separated, and I was out on Saturday and drunk on Monday. And I share that all the time for this reason, that being physically separated from alcohol, like we can be in here, has very little to do with being a recovered alcoholic. See, in working with those, it talks about how the new man can something like shield himself from drink. We can shield ourselves from this deal. Only winding up with a bigger explosion than ever when we get around our drinking again, right? Why? There's no spiritual awakening, and we still have the mind of an alcoholic. So I would go to these rehabs, and I would be shielded from this. We can come to meeting. You'll hear newcomers saying, or even some of us around here, I'll make the 1 o'clock, I'll make the 4 o'clock, I'll make the 7 o'clock, I'll make the 9 o'clock, tomorrow morning I'll make the 7 o'clock. You know, we do that, and we shield ourselves from living. We shield ourselves from packing into the mainstream. Alcoholics Anonymous, instead of becoming a place to wake up and live life, becomes a shield. So here I was in 9 weeks shielded from alcoholism. Guess what? 2 days later, I was fired up again. I still had the mind of an alcoholic, and I had by this time conceded what I was. I knew I was an alcoholic. But I would go to these rehabs and bless them. They gave me middle-of-the-road solutions. That's anything that doesn't give me directions on how to have an experience with this power. They would say, go to meetings. Okay? Talk about your issues. Talk about your dysfunctional family. What are you feeling today? What are you feeling? Identify your feelings. Healthy confrontation with other, I was going to say inmates, other clients. You know, things like that. Neat stuff. Neat stuff. And there's a place for that. What does that do for me to have an experience with this power? It lets me identify some things and probably blame others for my drinking. What does it do for me to have an experience with this power called God? And I can tell you this from my own experience. I used to be a seeker of beliefs. I used to be a seeker of faith. I'm no longer a seeker of either one of those. What I am a seeker of is experience. Experience this power. Seek experience with this work. We read the book. You have people reading the book. I read the book. I read the book, and I'm nowhere. Have you had an experience with the information in the book? Seek experience. Because when I have an experience with this power, faith and belief is done. It's part of the package. Seek experience. That's why I said earlier, with our experiences with this power called God, we should be a pep rally for it. Rather than, don't talk too much about God, because that guy in the back is new. That's contemporary A, what goes on. I got out of this fifth rehab and I was back on the streets, and I now was unemployed. I got bounced off the waterfront where I had a job as a longshoreman with my dad. He experienced my bedevilments. Everyone around me experienced my bedevilments because of what alcoholism was doing to me and to them. And so I will never get to a podium and say all you have to do today is not drink and you're a winner, because I'm like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. I left damage and debris behind me on my way in here, and now my job has been given. I've been given this gift. My job is now to go back and fix the damage and debris I caused on my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything short of that, and I speak for myself, would be arrogant, would be full of self, would be selfish and self-centered to the core. It would be just outright arrogant if I thought all I had to do was stay away from a drink and the amends I make to people out there is that I'm not drinking. Wow, did I miss the boat? And I speak for myself. I've been brought up in this deal where it's kind of questions from my old sponsor and my current sponsor goes like this. What's your meditative life like? Do you have one? How's amends? Are you writing inventory? Who are you working with? Where are you currently right now? Where am I this morning? How am I doing? Have I gone to work again? Am I having new experiences with this power? The whole deal that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous really is about experiencing the glory of God, isn't it? All the work we do, our point is to this power. All the work we do, fellowship, service, recovery, this type of event this morning is all about experiencing the glory of God, and everything we do is to get there. That's been my experience. Anything short of that, anything less than that, guess what? I'm running into me, and sooner or later, that doesn't become a very pretty picture, and I have to wash that away with something called Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy, or Bacardi, or Jack Daniels, or battery acid. Whatever. I hit my sixth rehab, signed myself out, and my seventh rehab, I was in there about 10 days, and the insidious insanity of the first drink was coming back. And by the grace of God, he interrupted my death and sent me to Minnesota. And for me, just a very, very special place in my heart. Right before that, I had made a plea to God in a hallway. My dad, who I hadn't seen in quite some time, showed up. God works through people. It isn't only people in Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that God gave my dad, you have a different speaker this morning. Because he showed up. Perfect timing, like God would have it, and pulled me out of a hallway. God pulled me out of the hallway, but used my dad as an instrument to get me out of a hallway. And placed me in my seventh and, God willing, last rehab. And I shoot out to Minnesota after about 10 days. And the message of the big book was presented in no uncertain terms. A book talks about perhaps we disturbed you on the question of alcoholism. People out there disturb me regularly. I was sober almost 6 months to the day. December 22nd, 1988, and it's about, 100 feet of snow outside. It's 100 below zero. I'm in Minnesota. It's Christmas is coming. You know, poor me. She don't want me anymore. I had a relationship with a girl that, you get two sickies together and you know what you got. And I was heartbroken, and I was trying to get work out there, and it was just all coming down on me, and I missed my family. And basically what it came down to was poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. And I showed up at this gentleman's door, and I shared with him my dramas of life. And I never forget what he asked me. He's, Peter, where were you with God in the 12 steps? I says, Joe, when do you start the steps? And his reply, without missing a beat, was, when you stop throwing up, you're late. Things like that disturbed me, because what I wanted to hear was, poor guy, you're in a different state, and it's Christmas, and go home and read page 449, and let go and let God, turn it over. And at that point, I was looking to turn tables over. He disturbed me. But the thing is, these people were sure about the solution, their experience, because they were sharing from experience, not opinions. And he gave me some things to do out of our big book. I was brought home to my first home group, the Free Spirit Group, and an appointed teacher was put in my life. And I worked with that man for almost 14 years, about 14 years. And we did this deal. When I met the guy, he was on fire. And then something happened to me about 2 years ago where I had this thing in here. This quiet, still voice told me, we need a new teacher. I hit a wall with this guy. And then my current sponsor, Mark H., showed up. And what an absolute blessing this man has been for me. Again, words fall short to share the experiences he has passed on to me and the disciplines he showed me how to work with. Great stuff. My family's been reassembled. I'm employable today. I sleep most nights. I stand here with dignity, and I'm part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to wrap this up, but I've had meditation experiences that have completely, once again, revolutionized my life in here because of the great work we're able to do. So, again, I thank you for allowing me to be here, and thank you for my life.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining us.